Welcome to Downloadable Content. We are Alex
and SJ Herschel. After a year later, we are finally reviewing Fire Emblem Engage.
Let's do it.
Welcome back, everybody. Today, as you can see, we have Brother Christian Hansen with us. How are you?
I'm doing great. Happy to be back. Very excited to talk about one of my favorite games, or game series, rather.
Yes. We meant to do this a lot sooner, but here we are.
Yeah, it's straight up in a year. Like, yep. We went ahead and looked. Fire Emblem Engage released on January 26th, 2023. And by the end of February, SJ was saying that it was his game of the year and that we needed to review it. So, you know, it's basically within that window of time. That's fine. But, yeah.
Oh, and the plot twist, right? It did not get game of the year, but it did win some categories.
Did it? Did it win something?
Yeah. I'm pretty sure it won gameplay.
Really?
I can see that. Yeah.
Maybe I'm wrong.
Uh-huh. They were your awards.
So
I don't remember.
I have a good short-term memory, and I have a really good long-term memory, like really long-term, as in, like, I remember, like, I have vivid memories from when I was, like, 3-4 years old. But my memory midterm, so, like, when we did the Game of the Year episode is really bad.
Interesting.
Well, this is going to be a really fun discussion then. We're going to have all the Fire Emblem fans jumping down our throats to try and correct us on everything.
I know.
But before we get into that discussion, we have a question of the day that comes to us from Jonah H. Sang. Favorite new character introduced in The Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom?
This is kind of a weird question, but does Ganondorf count for the intents and purposes of Tears of the Kingdom? Because I actually really like his depiction in that.
I also had the same question about Pura, because she's different. Is that a new character?
I would say yes to Ganondorf, but I wouldn't to Pura.
What about... Okay, so any character you've seen in Breath of the Wild doesn't count.
That's what I would say.
Yeah. Even if they've, like, grown up like, what's his face, the bird?
Like Tulin. Yeah. No. But I would say Ganondorf would count because Ganondorf doesn't appear in Breath of the Wild.
Yes. Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really, really like that depiction of him in the game. And he's probably, like, second or third favorite version of Ganondorf, with first being Wind Waker with that awesome, you know,
yeah,
dual samurai katana design is just
that's
so cool.
A really cool
but
Ganondorf.
This is up there.
Go ahead.
It's gonna be boring, but I gotta say it's Ganondorf if we're counting Ganondorf. Like he honestly makes so much of the game for me. Like if Ganondorf wasn't there and if it was like Dark Beast Ganon again, I would not be as nearly as interested.
Interesting.
I mean, he's like evil smile and everything, and the way he's like so... He really reminds me of, like, Twilight Princess, Ocarina of Time, Ganondorf, in terms of, like, how he speaks, the way he carries himself, you know?
Just this is imposing, like, Darth Vader almost... esque of invincible evil marching forward.
Yeah,
can't stop him.
Like he's so powerful and he knows it. Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. I don't really know because I, when this question got asked, I was legitimately confused. Because there aren't a lot of new characters in the game, so I don't really know.
Is
I mean,
Ganondorf's
great.
And Pen.
I guess you can count those little Zonai droids. Like they're technically characters if you want to count them. I mean, they're pretty charming, pretty funny.
Yeah. Oh, I guess you have, like, we can count all the Zonai people, right? The actual Zonai people we see in the cutscenes. They're cool.
I don't know. I mean, I've spoken a lot about this game and how some of my favorite moments are tied to characters that you meet in the first one. So, like, the newer characters just don't mean as much to me in comparison to the other ones in the game. So I don't really have an answer.
We'll revisit it when we get to the sequel to Tears of the Kingdom, where those characters will finally get their developments and callbacks.
There you go. There you go. But Grape Bird in the Discord made it very clear of his opinion. He says, "Pen." Like he just straight up just said "pen." Like that's it. That's the end of the conversation, I guess.
It's a good character. The only right answer, really, also from the Discord.
It's a good character. I mean, what happened to Cass though? It almost feels dirty because. And they know they took out Cass. And we've talked about this before, but they did Cass dirty.
Incoming Cass DLC at the next Nintendo Direct.
Yeah, he just didn't get casted for the game.
That was nice.
We're going to move on.
Good work.
I bought an new VR headset, the Meta Quest 3. I sold my old headset, got an upgrade, and it's been really fun. So I won't talk a lot about this, but the main thing that is new with that is I am not tethered to the computer anymore. So I'm able to stream like PC VR from that little box thing directly to the headset. So I could even be like upstairs in the living room or whatever.
In the car.
Yeah. For like 5 feet down the street, maybe. But it's been like super immersive, really cool. I just bought Blades and Sorcery.
Oh, nice.
So yeah, we'll see how that goes. It's been fun. And Alex, I know you've just been crazy busy, so.
Right, I got no updates for you guys. I'm sorry. I know we got to keep the content train moving.
Yep.
And I'm trying to figure it out, but I don't have anything new yet, so.
Christian, what have you played this week?
Oh, goodness. I am so in love with Baldur's Gate 3 right now, and I'm super excited for Persona 3 Reload and Final Fantasy VII Rebirth.
Yeah.
And the Paper Mario Thousand Year Door remake that's coming out later this year, and I'm going to die. It's just going to be so much. I don't know how I'm going to get to it all. And on top of that, you know, we all have that universal backlog problem. And
yep, games you bought.
Yeah,
months ago.
I'm really still trying to plug away at Knights of the Old Republic 2, and that's really fun. But another game that's like 80 hours long, so
I got to play the first one actually.
That one's really good. So far, I've enjoyed the first one more, but the second one is still a lot of fun.
There you go.
Okay. Well, we're going to review Fire Emblem Engage, finally. There's a reason why that poster has been up there this whole time. One, it's because we have a listener that was kind enough to send it in. But two, because I love that game. It's fantastic. And so, Alex is somebody who has never played the game before.
Nope.
Never played... Well, you have played a little bit of Fire Emblem before, right? DS?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
But not, you're not like a Fire Emblem bro.
No.
He has some questions for us that he would like to ask, and just kind of, he's going to lead us through the discussion, and we'll talk about what we like, don't like, how we rate, you know, certain aspects of the game and whatnot.
Right. So we're going to start with gameplay, just because gameplay should be one of your biggest focuses when you're actually playing a game, right? So I'll get to my specific question in a second, but if you guys just kind of want to discuss what makes the gameplay of Fire Emblem so interesting, go ahead and start there, and we'll go on.
So this is like Fire Emblem in general?
Yeah, sure. Start with that and then talk about specific things maybe introduced in Engage or things that are refined to be better than they ever have been. So.
Gotcha. Christian, do you want to?
Absolutely, start? Yeah. So for some context, I've been a Fire Emblem fan for most of my life. Played almost every game that's released stateside, including all the Game Boy ones, the GameCube, Path of Radiance, Radiant Dawn on the Wii, Awakening, the Fates games, except Revelation, sadly, Echoes of Valencia, Three Houses, and Engage. So, I love this franchise, and a big reason of why I love it is the gameplay, and it's a strategy RPG for those who are not otherwise familiar, where you control all your units on a grid, and they're all personalized, and different classes, different equipment, different stats. And the big twist is the series, you know, infamous permadeath mechanic, where any unit that falls in battle, barring easy modes in the newer games.
Yeah, right.
Shout out to my Phoenix mode bros. They're gone for good. And so there's a real investment in the characters, their progression, solving battles in a almost puzzle-like optimized way so that you're getting the most out of it while risking the least. And that's a very addictive loop of, you know, problem solving, character building. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, sometimes you get a really good story and operative word being sometimes.
That's true. Yeah, I agree with that. Just to add a little bit to what Christian said. So, yeah, you are on a grid. I always kind of explain it like it's like video gamified chess, but with more
waifus.
Flexibility. Yes, oh, and waifus, yeah. And husbandos. Definitely the waifus and husbandos. There is a rock, paper, scissor mechanic in most Fire Emblem games where sword beats axe. Axe beats spear and spears beat swords, and then you have some different units like archers and
magic units, flying units,
and the flying units you have like a couple different types of flying units too, and they all have their strengths and weaknesses, and so you're crafting a team, you know, balanced enough to hopefully be able to tackle anything, right? But before the game starts, you can view the map and say, okay, well, there's a lot of sword fighters on the enemy team. Mm-hmm. So I think this time I'm gonna use more of my spear units. Yeah. And whatnot. So there's a lot of strategy.
Yeah, there's also a very high ceiling of play. And feel free to Google Fire Emblem LTC low turn count runs, because you end up with crazy situations where you use every tool available, high movement, magic, RNG exploits to complete the game as fast as possible. There's a lot there, especially in some of the older games, that allows you to do some pretty wacky stuff that's a lot of fun to like really crack open. And that's one of the things I think Engage does really well is the tools it gives its player to like really break things open and have a lot of fun.
Very true.
Right. And so you guys have brought up all these different aspects that make the game work as it is. And one of the things that Fire Emblem is a little bit more known for is its difficulty, right? That permadeath function. So first off, which difficulty setting did each of you play this game on?
I believe it was, for me, it was Classic, which is the version that includes permadeath.
Okay.
And hard mode. So I think there's four difficulty modes.
So yeah, you have one, you can either play it on Classic or Casual, and that is a separate setting aside from the actual difficulty of the enemies. If you play it on Classic, you have permadeath, like Christian said. And then if you play it on Casual, you know, your teammates always just come back. You know, they never die in battle. They just retreat when they're defeated.
Okay. Yeah. So you played on casual and hard mode.
Classic
hard. Classic and hard mode. That's right.
Yeah.
I did the same. I did classic hard. Okay. I felt pretty comfortable going hard mode because I felt like when I played through Three Houses, which was my very first Fire Emblem game, normal mode got a little too easy for me, like maybe halfway through the game.
Okay.
I didn't really struggle, so I was like, you know, I'd like a challenger. I think I can do this.
Yeah.
And so within that, what outside of the fact that your characters can die, what elevates the game's difficulty? Like, what specifically within strategies or gameplay functions makes it harder than just, oh, I need to place my troops in the right area? What are the other factors that make it a bit tougher to reach that goal of having all your people survive and make it through the end of the game?
Well, in the context of Engage, that's actually a really good question, because in past Fire Emblems, particularly the Game Boy ones that many people are probably more familiar with, since those are the ones that kind of broke through initially, there was kind of a over-exaggeration of the difficulty. I mean, if you were trying to play as intended, where you're building a diverse army and creating a sort of mix of your favorite characters and maybe characters that aren't on paper the strongest, but they're like really cool, like they've got a design or, you know,
you just want to use them.
You just want to use them.
Yeah.
But a lot of those older games you can really sort of power through if you just like focus on like four or five like strong high movement units and just like snowball of death your way through the entire story.
Uh-huh.
And what Engage does is just have a high level of enemy like quality, like where you can't really just snowball a few units through because the actual strength of the individual enemy units is high enough that you have to play creatively to get around them. I think there's a chapter in the Desert Nation where there's like a bunch of warriors that are extremely high level, like come up behind you and you have to like race ahead of them to make sure you're not just wiped by them.
There are a lot of maps where you have some guys ahead and then some guys like ambush you right from behind and you're about to get sandwiched, so you try to defeat enemies in front of you and move at a quick enough pace to where you don't get overwhelmed by the extremely powerful units coming up from behind and such.
Well, of course, playing carefully enough that you don't let your squishy healer suddenly get ganked.
Yes, yeah. Always keep them in the center. Yeah, I would just add to that by saying, so like the main difference, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, Christian, because I haven't played as many different difficulties as you, but normal, I notice enemies do less damage, and they're like they have better stats overall.
Yeah.
So I don't think there's any difference in the enemy AI's decision making. I could be wrong.
Not to my knowledge. It's more enemy quality and enemy variety is the big thing.
And like even a little bit of difference in those, like the enemy quality, you know, their strength can make a really big difference because you're fighting a lot of enemies, right? Obviously you are typically outnumbered.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times, so most of the time when you have, when you enter into battle, when you attack an enemy or an enemy attacks you, usually the attacking unit will do an attack, and then the unit that got attacked, if they're able to, they'll do like a counterattack. And then if the unit that attacked is like significantly faster in terms of speed than the defending unit, they'll do like a counterattack, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's just back and forth. And a lot of times you want to get to the point where you can wipe out the enemy as quick as possible and, you know, kill it in one turn or two turns so that you avoid taking unnecessary damage on the next turn when they're attacking you. And that difficulty difference between normal and hard can have a drastic difference in how that back and forth plays out.
There are certain stat thresholds, like when you experience enough Fire Emblem, you know, like, okay, I know this character to have this specific speed level in order to be viable, or I need them to be doing this amount of chip damage. And that is something that Engage does well, is that it provides niches for characters where, you know, this character might not do a lot of direct damage, but they have the an ability that allows them to provide some chip damage if they're within range. It's like, I'll have this person attack. Oh, they don't quite one round them and kill them when they engage in contact or combat. But they're next to someone who has a skill that will just give them that extra 2 damage from a hand axe to, like, fully knock them out.
Okay.
Yes, I totally agree with that. And I'd say that it kind of boils down to, the harder the difficulty, the more careful you have to be, the more you have to be prepared for the worst. On normal difficulty, you can make, you know, some mistakes here and there and be okay. And mistakes meaning you recklessly, you know, let a unit go out front all by itself, and then it draws in the attention of all these enemies that are within range and gets attacked by like 3 or 4 enemies at once, right? On normal, you might survive that. On hard, you're probably not going to survive that. Yeah.
Okay. So considering all of that and the fact that both of you played on classic and hard mode, I'm going to assume that both of you went through some, at least 1 or 2 emotional deaths. Is that correct? And if so, yes. I'd like to hear the most gut-wrenching moment of losing a character in whatever way that looks.
Well, actually, for me, it would... So my favorite character is Boucheron.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's on this poster here. No.
No. Okay.
This is all the royalty.
He's the guy with the small nations. Head and the big torso.
Small head, big head, or small head, big body, large heart.
Yes.
Yeah, it was chapter 3 or chapter 4, and it was one of those sort of wake-up calls where I couldn't just, you know, rely on muscle memory, like, oh, place this unit here, they'll probably be safe since he's a fighter archetype, who are usually bulkier. And then 2 enemies came in, pincered him, and he died. And I was like, oh, okay. And he sort of became my favorite because of that death, where I'm like, oh, like, I need to avenge you for letting you down because I was being complacent.
So why didn't you just restart the game?
I did.
Oh, you did?
But the thing is with these sorts of deaths, like, there's a strong incentive to reset because you're missing a lot of story and character content.
That's true.
So in between these battles, characters can support each other, meaning they get these little dialogue snippets, and character A and character B, when they're next in battle, close to each other, they'll give each other stat increases. But it's also the main way you engage with these characters as characters, not just little digital soldiers. If you go forward with a character who's died, you don't get to see their story.
Yeah, because they're dead.
Yeah, so I usually reset in those cases, just to experience everything. But Iron Manning, Fire Emblem game where you just, like, plow forward regardless of death, is also a very common, very popular way to play. So to each their own.
There you go.
So with where you are in the story right now, you do have Boucheron.
So that you can see. I reset so I could give my Bushi boy back his life. And
so you don't have actual, like, permanent losses
as in effect, you are. Yeah, and that's sort of the debate with Iron Manning. Like, the case in favor of it is, you know, you're effectively removing permadeath at that point. You're just sacrificing time. And I have Iron Man, several of the Fire Emblem games, and it's really enjoyable, very gut-wrenching, as Alex put it.
I mean, it's like a It's the Nuzlocke equivalent of Fire Emblem, right?
It is, yeah. And in some ways, it's the sort of heart and soul of how the game should be played, because the games love to throw units that are, at first glance, seemingly worse versions of other units, but they sort of fill the function of, if you lost this unit, you now get a somewhat similar replacement that may be a little worse.
Exactly. Well, I had two battles where I could not... So, I had a few different battles where I lost units like that, but I just reset. I didn't, you know, and in my mind, if I can reset it and get through it without losing said unit, I'm good, you know? Like, I totally understand the appeal of Iron Manning. I may do that, actually, at some point in the future, because that sounds fun. But like you said, like, I want to see the character content, right?
Yeah.
But I had two deaths where that was seemingly unavoidable.
Yeah, for context, some of these battles will take upwards of 90 minutes, 2 hours, when you reach the end game, just because of the amount really of control and how many enemies you have to fight.
And that's the thing, is that I remember the first one, it was this one battle where you are just fighting hordes and hordes of enemies, and it's incredibly difficult, very long, and they're coming in from multiple sides, and you can't just sit there and wait. You're supposed to get to somebody, because like your objective is to defeat this one, you know, general or mini boss or whatever you want to call it, and you need to move to get there, right? But as you're moving, you have these hordes of enemies coming in, new ones spawning like every other turn, so there is a sense of urgency. You can't just camp and wait. And I restarted this battle 3 times because during my first 2 tries I got wrecked. And I thought I was being careful, and I was being careful, but like, just like you were saying, with the quality of enemies, they're powerful. Maybe we can talk about this in depth later, but the thing about Fire Emblem Engage is you have these rings, mm-hmm. and it allows you to quote unquote engage with heroes of the past. So that's why you have Marth in the game and a whole bunch of other older Fire Emblem characters. And if your enemy units, a lot of times enemy bosses, have these rings, they get those powers, the same powers that your players do. So you have to be aware of that. And sometimes they can pop up out of nowhere and just completely
obliterate you.
And anyway, the third time I tried this one map, I saw a way to get through this particularly difficult little battle that was happening at the bottom of this map. And I was so close to defeating that mini boss that would have triggered, you know, the end of this battle. And I saw one way to win it, and that was to let one guy die.
Yep.
Because sometimes throwing a guy in a certain spot, drawing in the enemies at just the right, you know, places, can help you have the upper hand on the next turn to just wipe them all out. And that's what I had to do. It was that boy right there.
Oh, you sacrifice.
I don't.
Fran? Or was it Clan? I forget. These two are
sister. It's not. It wasn't Fran or Clan. It's neither of those two. It's the healer boy that you get toward the.
Oh, Jean.
Jean.
Baby boy. No.
I had to sacrifice Jean. And I was so sad because.
You monster.
The story of this kid. He like. So he lives with his parents, right? And then I think, like, they're being attacked or something. And then he, like, helps save their little, like, area.
And when we say boy, we mean boy. Like, he's, like, oh, maybe he's 14 boy. Oldest.
Four, tops. 14 yeah, 14 tops. Probably, like, 12. And he's like, Mom and Dad, like, I want to go fight and, like, save the world with, like, with these wonderful people. Can I go join them? And his dad's, like, a doctor and stuff, and... And his parents were like, well, you know, that's like so dangerous and everything. But son, if that's what you want to do and that's how you want to contribute to this world, you go and do that. So then he's joining our cause, and I let him die in battle. So it was really sad for me.
It's going to be a really awkward conversation with those parents.
When yeah, it's you, like, you sorry, saved the world. We Hooray. Let your son die.
I do want to jump in with one mechanical clarification real quick, because this game, as well as Three Houses and Echoes of Valencia, features a turn wheel mechanic, which is a sort of do-over button that allows you to rewind time to a certain amount of actions or turns up to the start of the battle. So I tried to avoid using it too much because it really incentivized sloppy play, where you're just like, well, I'll throw this character out and maybe they'll get a lucky hit that'll, a critical hit that will do 3x damage and just kill his enemy. And if it doesn't work, then I'll just reset and try something safer.
Right.
So the situation that SG's describing, there's a limited number of charges for the turn wheel. So I imagine there was a situation where it's like,
I had turned back, time several times during that battle. And in that particular situation, it didn't even matter how far back I went, because this was my third time playing the battle. I knew how things were going to play out, so I just had to let them go.
So for anyone who's interested, it's not like one wrong mistake will completely lock you out of a character because they're just dead. It's like either that or reset the whole battle. There's some leeway with the more modern games where you get to, undo one mistake without having to fully reset. So,
and I honestly really like it. I think it's a great mechanic.
It's controversial within the fandom, but I do think it's done a lot to help cross the accessibility gap for this series, because Alex, as you might have surmised, this is a very unforgiving game if you if you're not paying 100% attention. So
yeah, definitely. And so with those emotional moments in mind, tell us a little bit more just about the story of this game in specific, and whether or not it's a strong story compared to other games in the series.
It was pretty good. It's okay. It's all right. It's serviceable.
It's pretty good. It's okay. It's all right. It's serviceable. Acceptable, I guess.
So, I think my standard was very high. Mm. Because Three Houses was my first game, and I know a lot of Fire Emblem people, I mean long time Fire Emblem people, that say that Three Houses was their favorite story. Mm-hmm. And Three Houses is my favorite story, and there's so many different stories in that one game to play out, and there's so much depth behind each character. This one is little more of a cookie cutter, here's your character archetype for each type of character. Not a whole lot of character development. They are who they are. There's a little bit here and there. There are like a couple of good plot twists throughout the story, I'd say.
There's at least one major one.
Yes.
So it's not complete straightforward, beat the bad guy, hooray.
Yep. There'll be some surprises along the way, and that's probably what makes the story for me. Without those surprises, I would have been pretty disappointed
with the story. In terms of story for Engage specifically, it helps to look back and compare to this series as a whole and what kind of stories they've gravitated towards. Early Fire Emblem, especially the Super Nintendo games, Fire Emblem 4 and 5, those games had very strong fantasy elements, but they were also very political. They were very dark in areas, and they really leaned into this sort of gut-wrenching brutality of like, the cute anime girl who, has green hair and is, she's dead now forever because you messed up. You want to reset? Well, that's up to you. And as the series has gone on, there's been a sort of softening edge to those elements, and Engage is perhaps the softest softening of those elements, where intro cutscene with the intro song, it's very Saturday morning cartoon Power Rangers kind of vibes.
Yeah.
Where the concept of these rings that SJ mentioned is that it's like they're celebrating the history of the franchise, bringing back the past protagonists. So Ike, Marth, Roy, Crom, all these famous heroes are coming back, and they use their rings like Sailor Moon or Power Rangers to power up. And there's definitely an element of these are all just anime medieval fantasy superheroes, whereas in the past some of the best stories, including Three Houses, would touch on classism, racism, nationality and religion, and sort of the interplay of like revolutionary ideology versus traditional like monarchy.
It did get pretty deep, honestly.
Yeah. And it's a real, I understand it because it was intended as like a celebration of the history's franchise, whereas Three Houses was like, let's craft a world and a story as a standalone experience. But I definitely prefer that to the, I mean, I still enjoy like the fan service of it all, but there's, you know, all the people on this poster are royals of different nations, and it unfortunately does boil down to like Mario worlds of like, these two are the prince and princess of the Flower Kingdom, and these two brothers are princes of like this warrior kingdom where it's all rocky. And these two are brother and sister, prince and princess of the Desert Kingdom, and it's like, okay.
I will say though, with the story, there were a couple of parts. One right at the beginning of the story was very shocking.
I know the one you're talking about. Yes,
Just, I did not expect that at all. I mean, I should have. Fire Emblem does that kind of stuff a lot. Yeah. But
don't be a parent in Fire Emblem. It's not a great career option.
Yeah, it's not all flowers and sunshine. Yeah.
Nice. And so within that story, we have a lot of different characters. But right here, much criticized upon reveal, Pepsi Boy.
Yeah.
Right? Pepsi Boy or Pepsi Girl. So tell us a little bit about this character and whether or not they actually ended up being a decent character within the game's narrative.
Should I go first?
What's their name?
Aaliyah.
Okay.
Aaliyah. A-L-E-A-R. One, I'd like to comment on their appearance. The blue and red is very
intentional.
It is intentional, and also it's less egregious in terms of just appearance in game. I think their in-game models, the blue and red, doesn't look as odd as it does on a lot of the artwork and things that you see. I think it's a very basic main character, don't you think? I don't think there's, like, they have some internal struggles of, like, their identity and things like that, but it doesn't really, I don't know, it's very surface level. I wasn't particularly, like, in my mind, the most, the part of it that was, like, I don't know the right word, like not relatable, but like, I guess like the most interesting or the parts that made me be drawn to the character the most was like their relationship with the mother.
Yeah.
That's like a really predominant part of the story and who that character is. But aside from that, I feel like they're just a, you know, I'm going to do what I think is the right thing to do, and I'm going to save the world kind of character.
Yeah. I will give them a little bit more credit, just because I think their introduction is pretty strong. Again, this is the very beginning of the game, so I wouldn't necessarily call this a huge spoiler. But on their first encounter after meeting sort of their first initial like units that join their army, there's a moment where they face off against some monsters, and this seasoned knight, second in command, who's like ready to serve and like super loyal and brave and honorable, is like, so we're gonna fight them, right? We're gonna drive them off. And Alir's like, no, we gotta get out of here. Like, super, like, take the coward's way out, get out of here.
Yeah.
Just like wants to run away. But then eventually, you know, traditional shonen protagonist, believe in oneself, sort of kicks in. But I did enjoy that moment as this sort of subversion of like, you're the chosen one, you're the hero. And it's like, let's be cowards.
Yeah, they literally refer to him as the chosen one, don't
yes.
they?
Which is interesting because that's something that's been, ever since Fire Emblem Awakening, sort of a predominant trend that's sort of divided the fan base, where there's this character who's supposed to be this prophesied hero. And unlike, say, Marth or Ike or Elwood or the other like older protagonists who have their own history, their own personality, their own arcs, you get characters like Robin or Byleth who are pretty much blank slates mm-hmm. for the player to imprint onto.
Right.
And Alir is mostly also that. It's right. a sort of blank cipher who's generally nice and heroic, but otherwise isn't much of a person outside of what the player imprints onto them.
Mm-hmm.
But they do get a couple shining personality moments where they're not just nice and friendly.
Yeah, there are a couple realistic moments for sure. And I did like that development of, at first, like, they were scared, you know, weren't sure if they could do it right, and then eventually they step up to the plate.
Nice. Well, I only have one more kind of, like, sum up and the topic kind of question. So if there are any other aspects of the game that you want to discuss before we get to that point, now is a good time to do so. So the conversation stays nice and fluid and stuff. Mm-hmm. So
Okay.
Yeah.
Christian, do you have any particular thing?
I would say that the thing I'm interested in engage primarily for is its celebration of the past series and as its ability to introduce people to these games that, like the first five games are pretty much locked to Japan unless you were lucky enough to have the foresight to purchase the Switch digital release of the very first Fire Emblem game on the NES with Marth.
Yeah.
So it's a really great way to sort of highlight these games that, well, I misspoke earlier, six games. But it's a great way to introduce the series to people who may have only just played Three Houses and look, there's this wonderful legacy and it's really fun to play with the abilities that these past heroes give to you through the rings. Like, there's stuff like teleporting across the map with multiple units, mm-hmm. charging forward in a straight line, and giving you a ton of extra movement. Like, creating areas of damaging effective terrain, doing extra damage. Which is always fine. Won't say no to more damage.
Right.
So the game really empowers its players and makes them intrigued in, like, the story of, you know, Ike and Sigurd and Marth and all these legendary heroes. And I think they're setting the basis for re-releases or remakes in the future to try and continue that momentum that Three Houses gave them as, like, Fire Emblem being like a main flagship franchise.
Yeah, now people know more about these older heroes and it opens that door for sure.
And for the fan base in general, the take is typically like gameplay is really fun and creative and engaging.
Engaging.
And the story is pretty mediocre, forgettable, unengaging. But I really hope that the impact of this game is that it allows Nintendo to sort of branch off with the franchise and bring things back, but also like continue that forward momentum for new people.
Yeah, no, I second all of that. Also, in terms of the rings and the powers that they give you, it's very well balanced. Like, you're not overpowered by having these rings and the powers of these past heroes because you really need them to get through these enemies because they're so challenging. At least this is our experience, you know, having played it on hard mode. But So the execution of the celebration of these characters was just on point. I wouldn't change anything about it. Also, just the overall presentation of the game and, and how it plays. Everything is just, it's so well polished and beautiful.
It's so pretty. Like, people make fun of the Pepsi colors or how bright and colorful everything is. But genuinely, I think this is the best looking Fire Emblem game in terms of visual presentation.
Yep.
Like, art style is subjective, and some people prefer that gritty 90s anime, you know, drab color scheme, which isn't a dig against it. I love that aesthetic. But, the sheer visual fidelity is the highest it's ever been with this franchise.
It really is. And it's like, I mean, I was coming from Three Houses, which I thought was a good looking game, and it is a good looking game. But it is more, a little more dull, a little more, you know, realistic looking in terms of color palette of,
it was built in the Fire Emblem Warriors engine. So, that explains a lot of it. It was sort of built in a system that was similar to Hyrule Warriors or Dynasty Warriors.
Gotcha.
Where it wasn't quite tuned to the, like, level of detail and fluidity of
Fire Emblem combat animations. And just watch, like, a trailer for this game and you'll see what I'm talking about. The combat sequences, the animations of the characters when you're selecting different characters on the map. I mean, just every little thing is just so well refined. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Nice. All right. Well, if you had to give this game a score from 1 to 10 and you had 30 seconds to try to convince someone to play the game, what would you say?
I'd say if you like strategy in any way, if you've ever enjoyed chess, if you've ever enjoyed other strategy turn-based RPGs, even stuff like Pokemon, I would recommend this game because of everything that I just said, but also it is a unique strategy experience that I haven't really experienced in any other game before. And the game, the core gameplay, like the Fire Emblem gameplay you get in this game, is in my opinion the best it's ever been in the franchise. And it's very approachable for new players, and it's a great gateway to a whole bunch of other older games that you could also try out as well.
Yes, I'd echo a lot of those sentiments. I'd say play this game if you're looking for a challenge, if you're looking for a cast of characters that's very colorful, very fun, and you're looking to experience a level of investment in their survival that honestly not a lot of other games will ask of you. I'd ask that you use this as like a springboard to enjoy the rest of the series, even if it's just looking stuff up on YouTube. And I, score wise, I'd probably give it, like, if I'm trying to be objective, like an 8 out of 10, but like honestly as a Fire Emblem fan, I'd give it 9 or even higher, just because of the impact it's had on sort of celebrating Fire Emblem as a franchise. And this has come from someone who, for me, the story was largely, you know, harmless fun. But, you know, your mileage may vary on that front. But that having been said, like, give it a shot, play it on casual, turn down the difficulty, use the turn wheel, and see how much it resonates with you. And if you find yourself craving a little bit more challenge and to stretch those tactical muscles, this game has a lot to offer you, and it's, yeah, definitely recommended.
I'm trying to think of what score I'd give it if I had to come up with a number. I think it would be, I'd say 8.5 out of 10.
Okay.
And really, if this game had a stronger story, I think it'd be 10 out of 10 for me. That is really my only complaint. And the gameplay and the presentation is just so amazing that those two aspects alone carry it all the way up to 8.5 for me.
Well, there you have it. So, if you have any questions about Fire Emblem as a series or Engage specifically, go ahead and send them in either by email or into the Discord.
I would also just add, if you are more of a story-driven person, you like story-driven games, I'd say start with Three Houses.
Yes.
If you're more of a gameplay guy, start with Engage. I think either one of those games is a good entry point into Engage. But yeah, let us know your thoughts.
If you got $500+, you can get Path of Radiance on the GameCube, which is my favorite, but that game didn't sell well, so it's really hard to find now. So Nintendo, please re-release it. Make it accessible.
Remake
it.
We
love it.
Give us all the old Fire Emblem games.
Give us the old Fire Emblem games. Thank you.
Special thanks to Christian, of course, for driving up here and joining us today. And of course, as always, to our Patreon supporters, we have Joshua, Grandpappy, Tyler, and Nicholas. Thank you.
Thanks, guys. We'll see you soon with another episode.
Talk to you next time.
Bye.